I think I'm good there. And last week we talked about this concept. We see it in Deuteronomy 10, this idea that everything we have is God's and belongs to God. And so if that's the case, then it should sort of color our, you know, what we do with our stuff, right? And so I use the word image bearer. We talk about fiduciary. And another way to consider that might be stewardship. It's like what we do with the resources that that God has given us, whether it's all things, time, money, and land, money that we've inherited, all of these things. And so maybe I talked too slowly, I don't know, but we sort of got through most of this and sort of finished with the wise spending last week. I think I left around the thought that Paul gave in 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 and 12. He said, to aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may walk properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. And so there's this stewardship of your life concept as we act as image bearers to God. And so we get to the most fun piece, which is the idea of avoiding debt. And so we'll talk about that a little bit this morning. Now, I believe that there's good debt and bad debt. And that makes me a little bit different from Dave Ramsey, who is always talking about pay off your debt, you know, hates mortgages even, and so on. Mathematically, I might try to convince you that a mortgage is okay, but we can talk about that in a minute. I suspect that the debt that comes with the American lifestyle is something that competes with us even and our affections and our proper stewardship of finances. So last week I told you, I've read this in several places, that evangelicals give less than 3% of their income in terms of their giving. And so you know, it's not likely that the people in this room sort of fall into that, but as a general rule, Americans do not give anywhere near the tithe or the tenth that we'll be talking about later this morning or next week. But we have grown up in a nation of with a consumer mentality, and it's very easy to get into debt, and the system that we live in is really designed to encourage us to get into debt. Now, I looked at a company you've heard of probably named Capital One in the past, and did some research on them. And if we look at an adult in the U.S. over a 40-year period, age 20 to age 60, if we, as an adult, carry a $5,000 average balance over our lifetime with Capital One, they will make $1 million off of that seemingly harmless $5,000 balance that that we carry. Now, in the last few years, that's actually gone up. The average balance for an American is now over $6,000. Around $6,400 is the average American credit card balance. Okay, and so This is why you see or have seen over recent years credit card companies come for younger and younger people. You know, they encourage college students to get a credit card because if they do, the compounding over the lifetime of the American sucker, that consumer, benefits them so much more. Really turbocharges that compounding. Well, the way they do it, obviously, is charging 17% APR compounding that monthly and reinvesting that money. So that's how they, it's just impossible to do better. If you're an investor, maybe you think, hey, that's probably a type of business I'd want to invest in, but that's not the class that we're in. So I would encourage you that that kind of debt isn't really healthy debt. It is debt that is really difficult. It's really easy to get into and really difficult to get out of. If you want to borrow money to buy a home or borrow against an asset like an automobile, or you want to borrow money to buy a business, I think that is okay. I think it's fine debt, and I wouldn't say that having a mortgage is bad stewardship in any way. The reason I say that is because we live in a financial system that is plundered by the Federal Reserve, and so every year the Federal Reserve prints money out of thin air and devalues the money that we have in your savings account by somewhere between 3 to 7% a year, okay, closer to 7%. So what that means is money that you're paying 30 years from now, a dollar spent 30 years from now, is worth much less than a dollar is worth in today, right? And so so your home value isn't going up because it's a great investment. It goes up in value because your currency that you value the home with is degraded on an annual basis. So so you use this home and scrape up the floors and dent the garage door and all of this stuff, and yet it mysteriously goes up in value every year. It's really because your government steals from you with currency debasement is a word. So why not borrow money today to buy an asset that will hold its value against a debased currency and pay it back with future dollars which are worth less, right? If I were arguing with Dave Ramsey on the radio, nobody would listen to that, I'm sure, but that's the argument that I would make and sort of push back on that. He wants you to be mortgage free. That's fine. If you are, that's great. That's equally, if not more, desirable. So there's good debt and bad debt, and we certainly see in Proverbs 22 is an example where Proverbs says that the borrower is servant to the lender, and so. Dave's argument for against mortgages is that you're making the bank money when you borrow money from them. And that is true. There is certainly a picture in scripture of somebody who is in debt is, at the mercy of the lender. We see that in parables, and certainly we see that in Proverbs. But throughout all of Scripture, there are people who are wealthy and people who are not, and there are people who are borrowers and people who are lenders. 1 Corinthians 7, Paul talks about people who are, the point of this is people who are come to salvation, and Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 7:21, "Were you a bondservant when called? Do not be concerned about it." In parentheses, he says, "But if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity." Verse 22, he says, "For he who was called in the Lord as a bondservant is a freedman of the Lord. Likewise, he who was free when called is a bondservant of Christ. You were bought with a price. Do not become bondservants of men. So, brothers, in whatever condition each was called, let him remain with God." And so I would make the case that the problem with bad debt, the problem with that sort of consumer debt, that Capital One type of debt, is it competes with our duty as a bond servant of Christ. Now, bond servants are typically, they would be people who are owned by some master. It can be very much like a slave relationship in Scripture. It can also be a situation where, hey, I have fallen on hard times. I took too much debt on, and I can't repay it. So I might go to Nathan and say, Nathan, if you can bail me out with American Express and settle my account with them, I'll come and serve you in your house. I'll help, look after the boys, maybe some decorating stuff. I'll hold the other end of the lumber when you're making crafts in the garage and things like that. I'll be your guy. You know, I'll clean up the Fords and make sure they're spick and span. He probably has somebody at work that does that, but all of those things, right? I will do for you if you will bail me out with American Express and settle my debt. So a bond servant could be a situation like that. And Paul says, hey, if you can gain your freedom, if you can work yourself out of the situation, avail that opportunity. And I believe he says that because we are bondservants of Christ as believers. And so if you have another master, whether it's somebody benevolent like Nathan who has helped me out, or somebody less kind like Capital One, right? To not be in a situation where you're serving another master. And of course, our system, our financial system in the U.S. is very much geared towards us being enslaved by debt to feed the consumer monster that resides in all of us. For some of us, that monster's bigger than others. But debt, so let's just think about this for a second. If I'm so far in debt, what might I do? I might pick up another job. I might be working on Sundays. I might, I'm doing these things just to keep my head above water, and it robs me of my time, certainly in worship, in service to others, and investing in my family and so on. I become a slave to Capital One rather than a bondservant of Christ. So this is again one of those things in a Christian life where there's perhaps a little bit of tension or a balance that we have to find between being a an American who is in this system and somebody who belongs to someone else and not ourselves. So there is this balance that we need to find. If you know of somebody, if you struggle with this, it's not what I do for a living, but I have a little bit of experience with this and training. If you need help sort of like getting out of consumer debt, happy to give you some counsel if that would be beneficial. So debt is the thing in my opinion, probably the biggest hurdle to giving generously, which is our second to last point here. And so we are Christians are commended in 2 Corinthians. We'll look at 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 here in a minute. And the idea of giving generously, joyfully, abundantly to others, and certainly to the ministry, and we'll look at a couple of things from from Mark as I kind of finish the last two points. But let's keep Mark 10:45 in mind. When we went through the study of Mark, I told you it's my belief that the keystone for the book of Mark is chapter 10, verse 45, which says, "For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." You know, we see this sort of concept again in Ephesians 5, you know, walking in the way of love. Christ lived as a sacrifice to God, right? He lived for someone else, and we ought to have that same mindset as image bearers, right? As custodians of what he gave us. And it's hard to give generously if you're enslaved by debt, right? So now that we've sort of paid that off so that debt won't sort of steal our joy, I asked Jeff for this when we were studying, it's like Thinking Christian. Do you guys remember that series that Pastor Jeff did a number of years ago? I asked him to reach into the archives for this, and I pulled his lesson on giving, and it really came from 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9. And so in these two chapters, we have a situation which is the Macedonian churches. These are a group of churches north of Corinth, and they were living in what we would call extreme poverty. They were for some reason, it's not explicit as to the reason, but they were in what we might say, affliction. They were financially in difficult straits, and Paul wasn't going to ask them to contribute to the Jerusalem church, but they did, and they did generously. So these are poor Christians. These are Christians who are so moved by grace and the love of Christ that they want to take part in the relief effort to the Jerusalem saints. So Jeff points out in this lesson that it was unexpected, right? A group of believers with essentially no means to speak of, it's subsistence living, are joyfully throwing in all they can, and I dare say even perhaps more than they should, you know, more than their financial advisors would recommend, right? They are getting into their resources pretty deep, and Paul sort of celebrates this in chapters 8 and 9 of 2 Corinthians. Jeff wrote here, "Think about the heart attitude of these poverty-stricken Christians. They saw giving out of the little they had as a privilege. Such thinking is not normal. Certainly wouldn't be normal here even today. It isn't something that originates in our world system. Desiring to help others when you are struggling to help yourself is kind of thinking that only comes by God's grace." Paul describes it, "We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia." And so what comes from people who are changed, transformed by grace, their attitude of selfishness and maybe even self-preservation, right? It's even in this particular sense, it's not even like, oh, they vanquished the idol of selfishness. Now, I mean, that idol is dead, and then some. They are putting their subsistence at risk to lavish on others, to serve and help them meet the needs of others. That's a different mindset. I mean, that's way past greed. And he wrote here and underlined. So this is a key point. Serving when it's hard, giving when there isn't much. This is how you think Christian about using your money for God's mission. This is mature Christian thinking about your money and your very life as belonging to God, right? All fitting with the theme that we've carried in the last week and a half. God can be trusted with both. He can be trusted with all of your stuff, the resources, and your very life. And we see this clearly and beautiful in verse 5. I think this is of chapter 8. He says, they gave beyond their means, and this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. Right? So that seems to be, in God's economy, the mindset that we should have, right? This generous, this cheerful mindset, sacrificial. I in the past had done a study about sacrificial giving, and I couldn't find the notes, but there is one who knows the meaning of sacrificial giving, and that is the Father who gave up his Son, right? So keep that in mind as we consider a church in Detroit struggling and so on. Yeah, Jeff.
I just, in Psalm 37 really bolsters what you're talking about right now. So Psalm 37, 16 says, better is the little that the righteous has than the abundance of many wicked. Then several verses later, we read, the wicked borrows but does not pay back, but the righteous is generous and gives. For those blessed by the Lord shall inherit the land, but those cursed by him shall be cut off. The steps of a man are established by the Lord when he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be cast headlong, for the Lord upholds his hand. I've been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread. So the idea here is, you know, the righteous are the ones that God provides, you know, to everything they need. That doesn't mean they're rich, right? The better is the little that the righteous has. And yet, the righteous trust in God's ways, and the result is not that they're begging for bread. The Lord sustains his people. He takes them by the hand and helps them, particularly when they trust him.
Yeah. It is easy for us, right? Because we love to compare, right? We love to compare ourselves to others. It's natural. And so we can say, well, you know, yeah, if I had everything that Jeff had, of course I could be generous, right? And we don't actually see that that modeled. It's what we see is wherever we are, like the having much or having little is all God's plan. It's not, you know, it's not my belief that the rich guy has God's favor only, and the guy who maybe has more modest means does not have God's favor. I believe that God places his resources where he wants, and that wherever we are at on the spectrum, that it should be a heart of service and giving, as Jeff pointed out in Psalm. So back to Mark as we kind of shift to the idea of a life well lived, right? So we want to avoid being in a situation where we can't afford our life with the by indebtedness. The debt rather should be to Christ and giving generously. This idea that we talked about in Psalm and in Mark 10 of a life of service, of pouring out whatever resources that we've been given. And so, you know, so the last point in this would to be to live for eternity, live with an eternal mindset. You know, Matthew 6:20 says your heavenly treasure is safe, right? We need to be thinking of thinking Christian thoughts with regard to the stewardship of our resources. So in Mark chapter 8, verses 34 through 37, I'll maybe finish up with this. He says, and calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, if anyone who would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? So it's much, different mindset of really the opposite of I want to stack as much as I can in my 401k. I want, the biggest house with bigger cars and so on, rather than the pouring out the stewardship. The mindset of I'm a custodian of whatever resources that I've been given. So we've got less than 10 minutes. I haven't even started about giving yet. So a long intro, right? So next week, I think Jeff and Dan are going to let me come back and. And so the question to think about this week as we consider Christians, by all accounts, give less than 3% of their income on average. A lot of good Christians disagree on the idea of tithe or no tithe, right? The idea of are we to give 10% of our income? Or is it just that we give with a joyful heart? You know, is there any rules to this thinking? And so my question to think of what advice would you give? Okay, so you've got this side of the class here. There's a lot of, older people on this side of the class, right? If somebody young came to you, a new Christian, maybe, in their 20s or 30s and said, Vaughn, how much should I give on Sunday? Like, what's the answer? What's the advice that that you would give? So be thinking about that and... We will compare and contrast maybe next week if it goes well. The idea of tithing and the law and the idea of offerings and grace next week, and maybe we'll figure it out. Right. So bring your scientific calculator next week. Abacus for some of the older folks. No. Look forward to coming back next week to talk about this. Thanks.